So as always, it's wonderful to sit together, to open my eyes and see your faces. So this month, I'll be reflecting on two Torah readings this week and two weeks from now. So this week, Yitro, and in 2 weeks, Truma. Both describe pivotal moments in the Exodus story,
Oh, hi.
which
Could you go a little lighter, louder? I don't know if it's coming in soft. Sorry.
Are people having trouble hearing me? No, can you turn your volume up?
I'm trying
Okay,
to.
okay.
Thank you. Okay.
I'll try.
That's a little better. Okay, we're
Okay.
good. Thank you.
So, Exodus, of course, is the story of our liberation from oppression, but also of stepping out of our predictable, if miserable, lifestyle in oppression into the unknown, the wilderness. And there, the promise of revelation at Mount Sinai awaits us if we can tolerate the dizzying and unsettling expansion of consciousness that allows for connection to Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. It's a dizzy and unsettling shift because it requires stepping outside of the language and logic that structure our perception of the world as we see it. We see it as a lot of separate people and things, and at Sinai, Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh is experienced through altered perception. Thunder is seen, the silent letter Aleph is heard. And after all the thunderous and earth-shaking experience, we end up with a set of rules we need to follow that guide our actions, that even guide our thoughts and impulses so that we may live more harmoniously in connection with other people and with Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. Paradoxically, much about these laws emphasize boundaries, separateness. We should not covet our neighbor's possessions. Those belong to our neighbor. We sanctify time by setting aside a day when we don't work, even though the whole idea of time is a human construction. There's no real boundary between things in the flow of time. I'm just going to. Similarly, we emerge from the experience of direct contact with the awesomeness of nature at Sinai to engage in Parshat Truma in a construction project that requires painstaking measurement, cutting, and transformation of natural materials into a human-made structure, in which the order and setting of every accessory is arranged according to plan. It's the opposite of the wilderness where nature is wild and uncontrolled, and yet this carefully controlled space is our portal to connect with Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh and with everything that we can't control. Through these boundaries that are reflected in the Ten Commandments and in Parshat Yitro, and later through the construction plans for the Mishkan in Truma, these structures invite us to experience connection with the unknowable and the ineffable nature of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. So I'd like for us to reflect on this paradoxical use of containment and structure through laws of behavior in Yitro and in a couple of weeks in building the space of the sanctuary as a Jewish pathway to expanded awareness. And this is our Jewish koan practice, reflection and meditation on something, a sentence, a story, a narrative that makes no sense in everyday logic. However, the unsettling and illogical nature of the language or the story, that structure leads to expansiveness. It pushes us to open our awareness to alternative ways of knowing. Because after all, that's the only way we could possibly experience Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh with alternative ways of knowing, because we're told over and over again, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh is not feet, eyes, nose, mouth, hands. So in this group, I've often referred to the wonderful teachings of Frank Ostiseski, the author of The Five Invitations, Discovering What Death Could Teach Us About Living Fully. We could say this is another koan, death teaching us about life, like boundaries teaching us about expansiveness in Torah. I was recently discussing a chapter in this book called that's about not knowing. And this is a friend who I admire greatly for her organized and skillful approach to problem solving, through which she has contributed to the well-being of many organizations through her consulting. And as we were discussing this chapter in the book, she said, "You know, I really don't get what he meant by form is emptiness and emptiness is form." And I would say many of us share her consternation, or at least the feeling that the true understanding of this is just beyond our grasp, even if the veil is lifted for a fleeting fraction of a second. So I'd like to read, I usually don't like to read long quotes, but this is a beautiful reflection from Frank Ostiseski that helps us understand our fear of death and our meditation practice as a potential path of liberation from that fear. And it's about form and emptiness. He writes, "Not knowing is a gateway into a deeper appreciation of the potency of our basic nature, which cannot be known by the conceptual mind alone. It takes us beyond our ordinary way of thinking and seeing things and into intimacy with this very moment. One characteristic of all humans that death illuminates is our desire for security in an ever-changing world. We want to know what the future will bring, and most of all, we don't want to think we are to die. When we take our personalities, our separate sense of self, to be all that we are, death becomes the external other that we fear. It threatens our long-held belief in the primacy of a unique and bounded identity. Who will I be without my familiar story of self? Even with superficial reflection, we can see that our attempts to make ourselves solid, separate things opposes the way reality works. When we mistakenly attempt to pull ourselves out of the river of change, we wind up feeling increasingly alone, isolated, and afraid. We're in a fight against nature. Reality cannot be mapped. And I'll add, from a Jewish perspective, just like the journey through Midbar, Bamidbar, our journey through the wilderness, after leaving the security of Mitzrayim, cannot be mapped. Reality is not a single static truth, but rather an endless unfolding mystery. And that is what often we refer to, what Rabbi Jeff Roth gave us, the way of defining Yod Heh Vav Heh is the unfolding of reality, the unfolding of being in each moment. And here we're reminded it's an unfolding mystery. It's alive, dynamic, and constantly being expressed through form and formlessness. The Heart Sutra is one of Buddhism's most renowned, beautiful, and confounding teachings. Its most central lines read, "Form is emptiness. Emptiness itself is form. Emptiness is no other than form. Form is no other than emptiness." The words are almost incomprehensible upon first reading. One might say also upon a third, fourth, fifth reading as well. Ostiseski says, the first time my son encountered this teaching, he said, Dad, is this the gobbledygook? Is this gobbledygook what you talk to people about in your meditation retreats? This is what you do for a living? It made me laugh. But if we stick with it, we see that the sutra describes the nature of our minds and of reality quite accurately. Just as we cannot pull life and death apart, neither can we separate form and emptiness. They are a package deal, always arising together. Emptiness is a difficult word for most Westerners. We normally associate empty with deficiency, sterility, a void. Most of us relate more easily to the words openness, spaciousness, or better still, boundlessness. I like to think of emptiness as an open expanse, a field with no edges that is not limited by any concepts. Think of how, upon walking into a large room, we first notice the objects in it, the tables, chairs, sofa, art, and lamps. But with a bit more attention, we might observe how the light is shifting from moment to moment. We become aware of the space that surrounds and holds the objects as they abide in it. Similarly, when we look at our minds, first we see the objects in it. Our thoughts, feelings, memories, daydreams, plans, as well as the sensations from our bodies, our perceptions of the events that are happening to us. A bit more reflection reveals that we're cognizant of these activities in our minds because they're occurring in the open space of awareness. This awareness is always there. We just don't normally pay attention to it because we're preoccupied with the objects, our perceptions and emotions, just as when we walk into the furnished room. Our attention went to the tables and chairs, not the empty space. So we could say the open space of our boundless awareness, which contains the forms of our thoughts and perceptions, is empty. The funny thing is, we think of forms as permanent, yet upon closer examination, we discover that even forms themselves are empty and permanent. Our ideas, fantasies, and physical sensations, we may think of these as solid things, but they're more like bubbles. They appear and dissolve. Or as my meditation teacher, Larry Rosenberg, would say, when thoughts arise during meditation, think of them as skywriting across the sky. Just they're skywriting across the sky, let them dissolve. Yet everything in the universe, we're like everything else in the universe. We exist and then we don't exist. Each life, each occurrence, each feeling, each lovemaking, every breakfast, every atom, every planet, every solar system is fleeting. Emptiness, on the other hand, is never ending. Emptiness, in fact, gives birth to form. Emptiness makes everything possible. When we take ourselves to be solid forms, death becomes the enemy. Death is the emptiness that threatens our form. We can relax some when we realize that our true nature is open, spacious, and boundless. Each of us is only a tentative expression of the great field of seamless emptiness. So those are Frank Ostiseski's words. And as I reflect on them in the context of our Torah readings, and as I reflect on the common themes of form and emptiness in Yitro and Truma, I come back to my understanding of the basic function of religious practice, spiritual belief, Torah, is to help us humans live with the burden of being able to imagine and long for the infinite, while at the same time, we're clever enough to know that for sure, we and everyone we love will die. And everything we love is impermanent. We can't hold on to it. Learning how to live fully in the light of death is what spiritual practice teaches us. Religious writings and rituals bring our attention to the unseen connections that bind us all together in a separate flow, in an inseparable flow of space and time. And these practices offer us liberation from the Mitzrayim, the narrow space of the self that we get trapped in when we see ourselves as a solid, separate thing that's gonna die. As we enter into Parsha Yitro, we're introduced to the unknowable and awesome nature of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh in a dramatic way. And then we emerge with a set of guidelines for our behavior that emphasize devotion to Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, separating out the Shabbat, restraint from taking or even wanting to take things that don't belong to us. From a universal perspective, we are all interconnected, not separate. So, as Rabbi Sheva Gold reminds us, when our interconnectedness is revealed to us, we naturally will not want to hurt or deprive one another, no more than one of our hands wants to hurt the other. But on a day-to-day, more relative perspective, observing boundaries helps us to get along with our neighbors. So let's take a moment to look at what laws do for us. On the one hand, laws are just words, just a set of guidelines. They are empty of any existence, separate from their impact on our behavior or their enforcement by humans. And yet, empty as they are, we think of them as guardrails for our behavior, keeping us in line, helping us to refrain from acting on impulses. A set of laws is empty. Yet laws also give form and structure to our community. Laws influence behavior, behavior shapes society. Both laws and behavior have form, but are also empty of separate, solid existence. They shape our lives only as all the moving, interconnected parts interact so that life and society emerge in unpredicted ways. Now, you may recognize this as a description of the phenomenon of emergent properties, as an example of complexity theory. And we might say that physics, which reminds us that solid things are mostly empty space, just subatomic particles whizzing around. And complexity theory, which models how families, communities, civilizations, and all systems develop, that these fields give us scientific evidence that form is emptiness and emptiness is form, that there is no clear boundary where one thing ends and the other begins. And of course, the people who practiced meditation a couple of millennia ago seemed to get that all along. In Buddhist teaching, these different perspectives, what we call Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, and what we do in everyday life, are often referred to as the universal and the relative. The universal is an act of the imagination. No one can perceive it directly. Yet we long to bring the values represented by our sense of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, of heaven, into our everyday lives in this world. So, in our Torah study, as we read and understand these universal bodies, these universal values, and as we embody and enact the laws, we're drawing the qualities of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh into the world of everyday life. And this is our role in the universe, to see and hear, to understand and embody the ultimate compassion of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, and to manifest this quality in the day-to-day world.